Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
It is October. You've probably walked around and seen ghoulish decorations, Halloween haunts about you. It's the fall. It's a time for ghoulish, dark, foreboding things. And actually, when it comes to sharing our faith and sharing truth with the world, there is a way that we can use the dark, the dreary, the horrifying to spread the gospel. Because sometimes in order to really appreciate the good news about Jesus Christ, his church, moral teachings that lead us to happiness and fulfillment, sometimes in order to appreciate the good news, you have to see the bad news first. The bad news that because of sin, we all hurt one another in different ways, but some of us in grotesque, ghoulish, horrifying, unspeakable ways. And ways usually when people do that, we have some common cause in our culture. You know, when you hear about a serial killer, when you hear about a horrifying crime against innocent people, news media and others will be quick to report on it, often for a very self-serving reason. You've probably heard in journalism, if it bleeds, it leads. If not just for ratings, though many people, I think, in the news media who report on horrifying tragedies also want to raise awareness for what's happened. And if they involve sin, moral evil, violence, murder, rape, things like that, I believe they also want justice for victims that have been involved. Well, here comes a movie dramatizing a trial that took place a few years ago that is getting the same treatment as the trial itself. The movie is Gosnell, the trial of America's biggest serial killer. And I'll just read to you what Wikipedia describes. Sometimes I like Wikipedia because it's a funny little mishmash of different voices kind of crammed into this peer-edited, peer-reviewed article series. So I like it. Here's what it says. Gosnell, the trial of America's biggest serial killer, is a 2018 American drama film about Kermit Gosnell, an abortion doctor who killed hundreds of infants born alive during abortion procedures. In May of 2013, Gosnell was convicted of first-degree murder in the deaths of three of the infants and involuntary manslaughter in the death of Karnamaya Monger. Gosnell was also convicted of 21 felony counts of illegal late-term abortion and 211 counts of violating the 24-hour informed consent law. After his conviction, Gosnell waived his right to appeal in exchange for an agreement not to seek the death penalty. He was sentenced instead to life in prison without the possibility of parole. So that is what happened in the trial of Kermit Gosnell. And I remember when the trial came forth, I believe there was a film, a smaller film, at least video made about it called 3801 Lancaster. This is where Gosnell was performing these abortions and performing infanticide, butchering women. And this film and the reports that came out really described how his practice was kind of it's been described as a house of horrors. So you think you've seen a haunted house this Halloween, this October, you wouldn't have seen anything if you'd gone into Kermit Gosnell's abortion facility. By the way, I don't like the term abortion clinic. Clinics are places where people are healed, where people are treated. People are killed in abortion facilities. So that is the term that I prefer to use. In Gosnell's abortion facility, you found things like extreme unsanitary conditions resulting in the spread of sexually transmitted diseases and sepsis, blood-stained materials, contamination by animal feces and urine, noxious fluids, the remains of aborted fetuses kept in jars, including remains from those after viability. You had improper equipment, locked emergency exit doors, malpractice, the lack of a properly trained staff, and routine drug abuse. Gosnell himself was known for being a prolific prescriber of OxyContin. In fact, I think that's what ultimately brought him down, was a raid by federal authorities for illegal drug trafficking and drug sales. So the movie, though, you would think, I mean, here's somebody who's killed women, is on trial for killing three infants, may have killed hundreds more. That what Gosnell did, he basically did abortions up until the moment of birth and shortly thereafter. And he was doing this, even though there are laws that say, well, if you get an abortion after an unborn child is viable, it has to be for a woman's life or health. Usually you have to have another doctor sign off on that, which can usually are bogus loopholes anyway. But Gosnell didn't even bother to try to jump through the loopholes. He just did late-term abortions without any kind of authorization whatsoever. And if these children were born alive, what he or other clinic staff, or sorry, a facility staff would do is they would kill these children by severing their spinal cords at the neck or at the base of the head, a procedure that they called snipping. And so, as I said, he was brought up on charges for killing three infants, but staff at the facility said he may have killed, he and others with him may have been responsible for killing hundreds more. So as I've been reading coverage on this, the movie coming out, it's similar to what happened at the trial. And the movie talks about this. The movie Gosnell, The Trial of America's Biggest Serial Killer. What the director wanted to show is what happened, why did it happen, and why didn't anybody care about it? In the movie, I haven't seen the movie yet, but I've read reviews of it. I intend to see it, and I hope you will see it as well, because I hear it's actually a good movie. Now, I've said this before in my interview with Patrick Coffin, and I will always stand by this. I do not think Christians should go see movies just because they are Christian. I think that gives Christian filmmakers an excuse that when they make a film, it doesn't have to be good. It just has to be good enough so that Christians will show up and you can make your money back. But then we're encouraging people to make art that is solely preaching to the choir. And the choir always needs practice. That's fine. But if you want to transform culture, you've got to break out of that. And Gosnell, what I'm reading from the meager reviews, which shows the hypocrisy in Hollywood and the entertainment industry and film criticism industry, it demonstrates it here quite clearly. In fact, on RottenTomatoes.com, I've only been able to find 6 reviews of this movie so far. There are 900 user ratings on Rotten Tomatoes. Out of 900 ratings, the film has a 4.9 out of 5. And it's opened this past weekend in 750 theaters. That's a pretty wide opening. I've seen other films that on the other side of this perspective, which we'll talk about in a second, open to much smaller audiences, smaller theatrical releases, but lavish praise on them. But what I've heard from people both who have seen it myself, what I've heard from people who have seen it themselves and from other film reviewers is that this is a very slick crime thriller. It is produced in a very good way. There's good acting, good writing, good pacing. And the horror comes from first seeing what Gosnell was doing and then seeing the apathy, how government officials turn a blind eye. How the media turned a blind eye, that in the film it shows how during the trial there are all these seats left open in the courthouse for media, reserved for media, and they're all empty. I remember when this came out, when the trial was airing, you had a few puff pieces on CNN, you know, things like that, but you did not have continuous coverage. It was essentially ignored. Even pro-choice writers came forward and said, yeah, we don't want to write about this. We don't want to write about this stuff because a lot of people in the film industry, film reviewers, journalists, they're pro-choice and they don't want to talk about an evil abortion provider. And so this film, it is genius in presenting the pro-life message from what I've heard. I do intend to see the film and I hope you do too. What I've heard when the scenes that are described to me, it presents it by just simply letting abortion speak for itself. That when you let it speak for itself, you see the horror of what's involved. You don't have to beat people over the head with it. So, for example, one scene in the film that's been described to me is that the defense attorney for Gosnell is asking questions on the stand of another abortion provider and asks the abortion provider, you know, how do you do second trimester and third trimester abortions? Talks about how, you know, the fetus is dismembered, how you would kill the fetus in the womb. And he said, what would happen if the baby were born alive? And the abortion provider says, well, we would provide the fetus or the baby comfort care. And he said, well, it's going to die anyways. Yeah. So, you know, I guess maybe it'd just be better to end its misery. No more questions. And so, you know, the film makes people think that, oh, wow, what Gosnell did was terrible, especially, you know, killing infants right after they're born. But what is the difference when an abortion provider does the same thing a few months earlier, even a few minutes earlier? And so if he's done this to hundreds of born infants. Then the subtitle, it's funny, I was reading a piece on the Huffington Post saying this is an inflammatory movie. The piece was written by a abortion provider saying this is just creating animus and stigma against abortion providers, calling him the trial of America's biggest serial killer. Well, I got news for you. Previously America's biggest serial killer was Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer. He was convicted of killing 49 people. I think it was all women, 49, at least 49 people. The number could be as high as 90. Even groups of people back in the 1930s, there was these Italian immigrants were involved in something called the Philadelphia Poison Ring. I think they killed at most 114 people. If it is true that Gosnell ended up killing hundreds of infants that were born alive in his facility, he really would be America's biggest serial killer. But how could this happen? So the film asks, how could it go on for so long? And if you read the Philadelphia grand jury report talking about Gosnell, you see what happened here is just that when you have elected officials with a bias towards protecting abortion, this is what happens. Here's an excerpt from the grand jury report. It says, under Governor Robert Casey, the woman in the report says, the Department of Health, inspected abortion facilities annually. No, I think it would be the state. But regardless, so the Department of Health was supposed to inspect abortion facilities annually. They did so under Governor Robert Casey. Robert Casey was actually, here's what's ironic. Casey was a pro-life Democrat, a very strong pro-life Democrat. Because of his pro-life credentials, he was not allowed to speak at the 1996 Democratic National Convention because he was so far against his party. He's a rarity among Democrats. At least he was. In fact, his name appears in the Supreme Court case Casey versus Planned Parenthood of Southeastern Pennsylvania. That was the case that rewrote abortion law in this country and brought in the undue burden standard and kind of revised how Roe versus Wade was applied in the United States. This was back in 1992. And so the plaintiff is Casey versus Planned Parenthood. The Casey is Governor Robert Casey, Bob Casey, pro-life Democrat. So under him in Pennsylvania, abortion facilities had to be inspected annually. Yet when Governor Tom Ridge came in, and ironically, Tom Ridge is a pro-choice Republican. He's a pro-choice Republican. The attorneys interpreted the same regulations that had permitted annual inspections for years to no longer authorize those inspections. Then only complaint-driven inspections supposedly were authorized. However, DOH policy during Governor Ridge's administration was motivated by a desire not to be, quote, putting a barrier up to women seeking abortions. I know friends of mine who said to me they have heard similar stories of abortion facilities skirting health code laws everywhere. I know in multiple states, pro-life advocates tell me they have heard stories about abortion facilities skirting health laws, performing late-term abortions illegally, and they go down to City Hall. They go down and file a complaint. I know one person went and asked for the publicly accessible building codes for this abortion facility that they suspected was involved in illegal activity, and they get stonewalled at every turn because you have people in power who support abortion, and they want to keep it that way and don't want anything to possibly threaten that to the detriment of women and children who enter these facilities, the children almost never leaving alive, sometimes the women not leaving alive, or women leaving being maimed and butchered because no one wants to provide oversight because, you know, nobody wants to raise those difficult questions about what abortion really is. So that's what happened with Gosnell in the Gosnell trial. Thankfully, he was found guilty, sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Then this film was made shortly thereafter. It was actually completed in 2015, but it just now got distributed. It took years to get this film into mainstream theaters. Originally, they wanted to just make this a made-for-TV movie, but the directors, those who were involved, the production company said, no, we can make a feature-length film about this. And so they brought on quality Hollywood actors. Dean Cain is one of the lead stars. If you remember Dean Cain, of course, I remember him from Lois and Clark, Adventures of Lois and Clark, you know, the old Superman show. As a kid, I really enjoyed that. So director Nick Searcy was attached to the project. And in an interview, well, he wrote an article in the National Review last month, beginning of September. He talked about the film. He said, the film has a gritty, just the facts, ma'am style, is well acted with powerful moving performances. So why has it taken 3 years to be released? I realize looking back that I was quite naive about how this film would be received. I truly believe, this is director Nick Searcy, I truly believe that if we did it the right way, even the so-called Hollywood left would appreciate our fairness in telling the story, seeing its value, and furthermore, share our goals in getting this important story before the public. Sorry, from my experience in doing a pro-life activism and trying to share the pro-life message with the world, no matter, they don't care about fairness. They care about keeping abortion, and they will fight dirty and unfair in response. And I have seen that firsthand. I have seen pro-choice advocates lie. It's so funny. I was once that naive little boy. Isn't he still a little boy? He's pretty young. I was once that naive young man saying, you know, we could just be fair. We should try to be, you know, present both, be objective. We can show people this evidence. We should work with them. We shouldn't say this phrase or that phrase. I remember one of my mentors said, Trent, listen to me. These people will lie through their teeth to beat you. It's fine for you to be fair. It's fine for you to be objective, but you cannot forget that. They will lie through their teeth and do anything they can. And I've seen it. I've seen people lie. I've seen pro-choice advocates, not just regular pro-choice people, but the activists, lie about what I and myself and my pro-life cohorts have done at university events, what we've done in front of abortion facilities. And they don't care. They don't care. They will do whatever it takes. Because if they're okay with children being dismembered, you don't think they're gonna, you think they're gonna care about lying? You think they're gonna care about other sins? No, not at all. Not at all. So, sorry, if there's one thing that gets me worked up, it's abortion. Well, that should be expected. He goes on to say, I was wrong. As I said, this town runs on fear. The fear not only of failure, but more insidiously of being shunned because of your political opinions. He goes on to say, many people, some of them good friends of mine, declined to work on this film, not because of its quality, but because of the fear of reprisal or even ostracism by the groupthink herd in Hollywood. More than once, I was asked questions like, are you crazy or are you sure that you want to do this? So when I've looked at the reviews online for Gosnell, it's fascinating the disconnect, the hypocrisy you see in Hollywood over the issue of abortion in films. Like I said, there's only six reviews online. The two from well-known media outlets, Forbes and Los Angeles Times, give it a rotten review. And it's amazing there's only six reviews, given that the film has already made over $1 million in its opening week, in this opening weekend, and it's open to, I think, over 700 theaters. It's in the top 10 for box office films. It's not just a nobody film. And other films on the other side that have done worse have gotten lavish praise. So Michael Rechtstoffen in the Los Angeles Times, this is what he says. While Michael Beach's district attorney informs his team, including Sarah Jane Morris and Dean Cain, the actors involved, that they're trying a murder case and not an abortion case, whatever pretense the production may have exhibited as doing likewise is quickly cast aside with every clinically graphic description and pointed jab at the mainstream media it accuses of burying the trial. No, this trial was certainly buried when you look back at the media blackout. Jonah Goldberg actually wrote a whole book on the media blackout related to the Gosnell trial. Nobody wanted to touch this thing. And there were editorials in Slate Magazine and The Atlantic, which are left-leaning publications that often defend legal abortion, that admit, yeah, we blacked out the Gosnell case. We didn't want to talk about it because we support abortion. It makes us look bad. Directed by character actor Nick Searcy, who also plays Gosnell's smug defense attorney and adapted in part from the book co-written by Anne McElhaney, who previously made a documentary examining global warming hysteria. That's his way of telling his readers, oh, don't, these people are crackpots, don't listen to them. The film never loses sight of the choir to which it is plainly preaching. And that's other people, I'm sure if you asked other well-known critics in Hollywood, they would say, well, it's just propaganda piece against abortion. And yet here's my example that the critics don't apply their standard the same way. In 2014, there was a film released called Obvious Child, directed by starring Jenny Slate. I forget the name of the director, Gillian Robespierre. Gillian Robespierre was the director. Jenny Slate was the actress, main actress in the film, Obvious Child. And this was a film that was created specifically to promote abortion. In fact, the National Abortion Rights Action League, NARAL Pro-Choice America, supported it. Planned Parenthood supported this film. And the genesis of the film, Obvious Child, when it came out in 2014, it was that people were sick, well, not people, these pro-choice activists were sick of comedies like Judd Apatow's movie Knocked Up, where women get pregnant and then don't just have an abortion, because obviously that would be what most women would choose to do, or that there's a lot of stigma related to it. I remember in Knocked Up, one of the characters talks about abortion and says, you know, shouldn't she get a, I'm not going to say it, guys, a schmishmortion? You know, it rhymes with that. But it's talked about but never entertained as a serious possibility. And so a lot of these feminists and pro-choice activists got together and said, well, we need to make a film that show, you know, a topsy-turvy world we live in, a romantic comedy about abortion. And that's what it is. That's what people admit it is. In Slate Magazine, June 2014, the online edition of Slate, Amanda Hess writes this. She says, yes, the film's satirical potential is somewhat limited by its unambiguous politics. The filmmakers have teamed up with abortion rights group NARAL to sell the movie, and promotional materials state that Obvious Child is a story that depicts one young woman's reality and many women's rights. The movie features the most charmingly competent Planned Parenthood doctor that a young sexually active woman has ever seen. So it is just very clear with this film. Now, thankfully, the film bombed because, look, nobody wants to see an abortion romantic comedy unless you live in some weird feminist pro-choice bubble, you know, in your Manhattan office overlooking Fifth Avenue or something. Nobody wants to see that because it's not heartwarming. Here's the plot of Obvious Child. Jenny Slate, who you might remember from Parks and Rec, she's John Ralphio's annoying younger sister. She was also notorious, infamous that on Saturday Night Live, she's one of the few guest actors who cursed, who said an expletive live on television. Couldn't, you know, control her speech there. So when you look at the film, here's basically what the film is. Slate is a up and coming comedian who disses her boyfriend in her act. He breaks up with her. She's depressed. She sleeps with a guy. She gets pregnant. She doesn't know what to do if she's pregnant. She doesn't know, oh, is this guy going to stay with me? What's going to happen here? And then she ends up going to the abortion clinic on Valentine's Day, and he brings her flowers and says he supports her because he is a woke, good man that feminists would appreciate. And that's the movie. Yeah, it's gross. I know. And it's not that good of a story either. It's nothing that really engaging about it. And it's clearly propaganda preaching to a choir, yet do you see that in the reviews? No. On Rotten Tomatoes, it's got over 100 reviews, and it's ranked at 90% among critics who like this film. But it did. I will tell you, it did bomb. Sorry, it bombed at the box office. It only made $3 million in its 18-week run across 200 theaters. We don't know what its budget is. I went to boxofficemojo.com, which is a great website to see how films do at the box office. And the film, it doesn't say what the budget is, but I imagine the budget could have been pretty high, you know, to bring in someone like Jenny Slate, film in New York, everything that's involved. It may not have been huge, but it doesn't say what the budget was. So it's quite possible the movie did not make back its budget. Now compare that to Bella, which, you know, is a good movie that has a pro-life perspective on unplanned pregnancies. It cost $3 million to make. It was released a few years earlier. It grossed $8 million, 457 theaters, lasted in theaters twice as long. Yet the critics all say, I remember reading reviews, it's just a thinly veiled anti-abortion tract. So that is the hypocrisy in Hollywood that you will find. So I would encourage you, that's why I wanted to devote the podcast to this. I am planning and committed to see this film because, one, it is a good movie. I've heard it's good. If I see it and I don't like it, I will issue a retraction. I'm planning to do a bonus review of the film here on the podcast for our premium subscribers. If you want to hear that and other bonus content, please make a donation at trenthornpodcast.com. But also, it's encouraging people. It's a great way to spread the pro-life message. Even if you have friends who are ambiguous about abortion, you can, you know, as an idea for them, say, hey, what do you want to do? Especially like around Halloween, you can say, hey, you want to see kind of a creepy movie? Like, ooh, what's that? What do you mean? It's creepy. Does you want to see like a creepy, disturbing movie because it's Halloween, you know, get kind of spooked a bit? Yeah, well, go see Gosnell. It's a movie about the biggest serial killer in America that nobody wanted to talk about. And there you go. You've got kind of a stealth way to present the pro-life message to someone without beating them over the head with it. So that's one reason I wanted to share that movie with you and that hypocrisy, because I do think it's helpful for us when we want to talk about these issues. I mean, just saying to someone, so, you know, what'd you do this weekend? Oh, yeah. Hey, what do you think about abortion? We want to spread the pro-life message. We want to spread our faith. We want to do so in not so awkward ways. So it's great to capitalize on current events, either in news or media, films that are released. It's an easy way to do that. Also wanted to bring up on this episode, just reading about the pro-choice advocates, Planned Parenthood, those who support legal abortion, what they are doing now that Brett Kavanaugh has been confirmed and placed on the Supreme Court. People are freaking out, yo. That's what my wife and I would say if things aren't going well. I'm freaking out, yo. Because I remember on CNN, Jeffrey Toobin, he always says kind of these hyperbolic things related to abortion. He says, 2 years, Roe v. Wade is overturned. And I think he just says that to get a good soundbite for CNN. But he and other advocates are worried. So Planned Parenthood has actually released a document called Care for All, a three-part plan to protect and expand access to abortion in the United States. Amanda Marcotte, who is a pro-choice feminist, can be a very biting writer, doesn't hold the punches back when she's writing about things. I haven't read her in a long time, actually. But on Salon.com, she referred to this plan, as an abortion underground railroad. Yes, because helping people kill their babies, helping children's lives be ended in states where thankfully one day it might be illegal, is equivalent to helping slaves get to states where they can now be free. Which is ironic, of course, to compare it to the Underground Railroad, because abortion disproportionately affects the African-American community. African-Americans comprise about 13-14% of the population, yet make up, I think, for like one-third of abortions, and that this is disproportionately targeting African-American minority and low-income neighborhoods. Nobody contests that. And so there is this plan that Planned Parenthood has released. They're going to fight abortion restrictions. They're going to try to find a way to improve care. What they're going to do, and what my listeners, you need to be aware of, is that in certain states, what they're going to try to pass are these Freedom of Choice Acts. That there's some states, I mean, if Roe v. Wade is overturned and states get to vote, there are going to be states like South Dakota and Mississippi. Hopefully, if it's done right, it won't be too difficult to make abortion illegal in those states, as long as pro-lifers work together and you don't bite each other's heads off. So come on, people. Sometimes the worst enemy of the pro-life movement is the pro-life movement, that we can somehow backbite and stab each other in the back with criticism. You're not pro-life enough and you're not pro-life enough. And then we feel better about ourselves because we would rather be right and have our principles than make success and protect children's lives. Now, I'm not saying be unprincipled or duplicitous by any means, but I am saying pro-life advocates, work together, put your differences behind you. And if Roe v. Wade is overturned, let's focus on states where we can protect unborn children immediately. But there's other states, even if you overturn Roe versus Wade, you'll have states like California, New York. Some of those states actually have laws written into their state constitutions that enshrine the right to abortion in the state constitution or in the state laws themselves. So I think Planned Parenthood is working at the state level to try to pass those laws at the state level in case Roe versus Wade is overturned. That way there's kind of a Roe v. Wade in every state, because a lot of people misunderstand Roe versus Wade. Roe v. Wade did not make abortion legal. Roe v. Wade's not a law. It's a court case. It's a ruling. And the ruling from the Supreme Court in 1973 simply said that states could not outlaw abortion at various times in pregnancy for various reasons. So in 1973, Roe versus Wade said that in the first trimester of pregnancy, the state can do nothing to regulate abortion. Nothing. In the second trimester of pregnancy, the state can regulate abortion, but only to protect a woman's health. In the third trimester of pregnancy, the state can outlaw abortion, but it has to leave an exception for a woman's health. But health, in the companion case to Roe, Doe versus Bolton, a woman's health can include anything physical, emotional, psychological, familial, or age-related, which is basically anything. It's a giant loophole, one Gosnell never jumped through, because there's always going to be people who still do depraved things, even in an imprudent way, and they get caught. But other people, late-term abortion providers, have taken advantage of this. An attorney general actually once spoke to me and said a late-term abortion provider justified the late-term abortion of twins because twinning can be called a fetal anomaly. It's a health reason because twins are unusual. So, I mean, this is what you see from these people. Dr. Warren Hearn is a late-term abortion provider in Boulder, Colorado. If somebody tells you, I don't believe abortion's legal in the third trimester, show them drhearn.com, drhern.com, and say, it's right here. If it's illegal, why haven't they arrested this guy yet? Back in the 70s, Dr. Hearn wrote an article asking, I think it was asking somebody to the effect, is pregnancy natural? And he made the argument that not just pregnancies that go awry, but all pregnancies represent health risks or a mother essentially getting sick, that she is suffering some kind of sickness. And so abortion should always be seen then as some kind of way to treat a patient of a sickness, that abortion is just not something natural for a woman to go through. It's a completely boneheaded article. And maybe I'll critique it for a bonus content here on the Council of Trent podcast. I should dig that one up and read it to you. But that's what you see from these late-term providers. So what happened, though, that's the way Roe was. So Roe struck down laws, and abortion essentially became legal in all 50 states through all 9 months of pregnancy for any reason, though not all 50 states had late-term abortion providers. Only a few of them are willing to do this most grotesque of all of the procedures. Now, in 1992, remember when I talked about Governor Bob Casey and Casey versus Planned Parenthood? That's when things change. So in that case, the court threw away the trimester system and said, look, here's what they said. You can regulate abortion even in the first trimester. You just can't place an undue burden on a woman. So the court held that Pennsylvania had several laws regulating abortion, and it struck down only one of them. It struck down the law requiring a woman to get her spouse's consent to have an abortion. They called that an undue burden. Can't do that. But you can require children to get their parents' permission. You can require women to wait, to go through a waiting period. And that's something Gosnell always violated. He never did the waiting periods hundreds of times. But this is it's a serious procedure. You can require informed consent, telling women, here is what is involved in the procedure so that you know all the risks entailed, that you know what abortion is before you have one. I know people who have been told by other abortion providers, they say, well, is this a baby? And they say, it's just some blood. And that's like in the late first trimester when all the major bodily systems are in place in the unborn child. So that's why Planned Parenthood versus Casey is at least good with the undue burden standard that, yeah, you can regulate abortion in the first trimester, second, third. But it said after viability, after that point, states can ban abortion, but the health exception is still in place. And as we saw, that's a giant loophole. So to go back to the Planned Parenthood report, they're concerned that essentially, we're really following Planned Parenthood versus Casey now when it comes to abortion laws, but Casey itself is rooted back in Roe. Roe versus Wade is what set this off. It's not even Roe. Before that, it's Griswold v. Connecticut, 1965, when the court said that people have a right to privacy, and so the state can't ban the sale of contraceptives, at least to married couples. So what's happening here is, that's why the Kavanaugh hearing was a pure circus and craziness, because people know that the right to many of these things that they support, like legal abortion, contraceptive mandates, all of these things, they hinge on something ethereal, wafer thin, this right to privacy that's not in the Constitution. Griswold v. Connecticut says it's found in the penumbra. Roe uses that phrase. It's the penumbra, emanation. It's implicitly found there, which is kind of a way of saying it's not really found there, but you can kind of see how it's there, right, people? They're basically doing the equivalent of the constitutional magic eye puzzle. I just see a bunch of colors. No, there's a horse there. It just squint really hard and you can see it. I mean, that's not the greatest analogy because I guess there really is a horse there. But I agree there's a right to privacy in the Constitution. That's called the Fourth Amendment. You have the right to be secure in your papers and persons. The government just can't search my car or search my home without a warrant. So you have a right to privacy in that regard. But your right to privacy does not entail that you have the right to go into a facility and end the life of your unborn child. The right to privacy doesn't mean you could do anything related to your own body or your own medical desires. So that's why this fight over Kavanaugh was so intense, because if just a few justices kind of invented this right a few decades ago, if the makeup of the court changes, the right itself may evaporate, this alleged right. And hopefully so we can have some jurisprudential sanity back into our laws that they will protect unborn children, just like they used to in the majority of states prior to Roe versus Wade. So in this report from Planned Parenthood, it says this about what they're going to do if Roe is overturned. And they say, we'll be fighting abortion restrictions at their source. The stigma that still surrounds abortion in this country. We'll be enhancing our efforts to destigmatize abortion in the media and across popular culture, including working with the music, fashion, movie, and television industries and announcing additional public awareness campaigns in the coming months. And this is what they're going to say. They are going to try to make abortion, what abortion is this woman's story about how she wants to be able to live her life and not have to endure horrible side effects, whether it's rape, whether it's life's in danger, fetal anomaly. They're going to take abortion and move it away from the procedure itself. And this is what they've always done, and they will continue to do. They're hoping is that when people think of abortion, they will think of a woman, and they will think of why she has an abortion, and that is all they will think of. That when it comes to winning on issues, it's all about controlling what first pops into a person's mind. For a long time, people did not support so-called LGBT or so-called same-sex marriage, didn't support these things because when they heard gay or lesbian, when you hear same-sex marriage, they envisioned the act of sodomy, thinking of sodomy and thinking, well, oh, that's unnatural. That's not right. That's not good for you. That's not good for anyone. We can't support that. And now when people think of same-sex marriage, they think of happy, smiling grooms and brides, not groom and a bride, but two grooms and two brides over a cake, and you see happy, smiley faces. That's why a lot of people support IVF, because they see happy, smiley babies with happy, smiley parents, and they don't see all the embryos that were destroyed in the process or the harms that come when an embryo is created outside of the safety of his or her mother's body. And they'll want to try to do the same with abortion. Now, thankfully for pro-life advocates, the ugly reality of abortion is easy to demonstrate to people, and we have to be committed to that. If we're going to win, if we're going to keep pushing forward as pro-life advocates, we've got to get the ugly reality of abortion out there. I firmly disagree with people who think that the way to end abortion in America is to simply change socioeconomic policies so that women feel like they don't need an abortion. But here's the thing. Even if you give people maternity leave, you give people childcare, at the end of the day, having a child and raising them until they are 18 or placing that child for adoption is a very, very difficult thing to do. And no matter how many incentives you give someone, it is still far easier for them to choose abortion. The only thing that would motivate them not to choose abortion is the horror of realizing they're murdering their child and they don't want to live with that for the rest of their lives. As I said at the beginning of the episode today, sometimes to appreciate the good news, you got to see the bad news first. So we as pro-life advocates in a gracious, assertive, tactful, appropriate way, we need to be able to share the bad news about abortion and the good news of defending the right to life of every human being. And we can do that. That's why I've created so many resources for you guys. Go listen. If you want to learn how to do that, read my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, or even just go to Catholic.com and search for the episodes, Why Are You Pro-Choice? I tell you, if you listen to just a few hours of those, you'll be ready to have conversations with your friends and family on this issue. And share with them any opportunity you have that shows what abortion is and they don't feel like you're beating them over the head with it. And sharing them about the movie Gosnell, I think, would be a great way to do that. So I hope that this was helpful for you all. I hope you enjoy the rest of your week. Do stay with us tomorrow on Free For All Friday. I know today was a heavy topic. Abortion, infanticide, ugh. Tomorrow is going to be a lot lighter because it's Free For All Friday. That's where we get to have a little bit of fun. What kind of fun will we have? You will find out if you tune in tomorrow. So thank you guys for being here. Do share the podcast with others. And if you become a premium subscriber, you can make a donation online. That will move us closer and closer to getting to have our video elements put together and to expand the podcast, which already your support has made it possible for this to be a daily podcast. I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for your prayers. And I pray that you all will have a blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content, For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.